Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimsanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, this is Debbie Brock calling in today to the show, and we're going to be doing a rebroadcast from show number 2 for your listening pleasure. And before I start that, we're going to go ahead and just remind everyone that we have a show also tomorrow with Alan Phillips and a guest, Heidi Stevenson, will be talking about vaccinations and your rights in the United States and the effects and plans of government to institute types of vaccinations for your family, for your children, and also for adults. As well as that, on Monday at 11 a.m., we have the Health In Show. We're going to be continuing a discussion about shock, grief, long-term and chronic grief, and how to get your life back, because many people can suffer through that. To find that show, simply go to the front page of Homeopathy World Community, and you will see a banner that says July 30th, 2012 at 11 a.m. USA, the Health In Show. If you wish to listen to archives of any of those shows, they are available by going to the Health In group link, and there's a total listing of all the shows. For the Blog Talk Radio, all of these shows are also archived, and simply go to the main page of Homeopathy World Community, and you can hear shows about studying the Organon, the practice of medicine, facial analysis with Grant Bentley. We have pet health with Dr. Christina Chambreau. We've got special guest shows loaded up there onto the archives as well. And the entire series with Dr. Adil Chimsanawala Kasim, who right now is out doing some programming and won't be back until the middle of August. So I hope folks are taking it easy this summer. It's pretty hot out there, and you want to just sit back and listen to learn and study. You can also go on to Homeopathy World Community, where there are thousands, literally thousands of great articles to learn about homeopathy, about health, about taking control of your life, about lifestyle living, what is a good diet, just everything that you want to know. And for those who are fans of homeopathy, please go to the Facebook Homeopathy World Community website. So I'm going to go ahead and get started and play the show. And if you have any questions, I do have the chat open, and maybe at the end we will talk a little bit more. Thank you. In the previous sessions, we talked about hypertension and heart health. We also had a couple of questions that were left. Dr. Neha Shah was asking, what are the constitutional remedies that help hypertension? And Radomir Hickel had asked about explaining low potency in hypertension, that would be using the LM potencies and whether they were considered to be low potency. This is kind of technical information for those who are not homeopaths, but I'm sure we can
explain it thoroughly to make it understandable for the general public. The other information that I can tell you is when we get started, we're going to refresh again what is the definition of hypertension. And we talked about a couple of the issues dealing with that illness. And we want to know really about how this disease evolves. How does it get started? Because last show he talked about hypertension even in very young children today and how that could happen. There are also many complications dealing with hypertension in many organs of the body. And what is, he would give us some definitions of some technical medical terms like nephropathy and retinopathy, and what happens with a person's heart when it gets enlarged, and hypertrophy and due to hypertension, and what are the techniques that Dr. Otto will use to manage this type of disease. I can refresh for some of you his background. Dr. Adel has received his MBBS from Nagpur University, his diploma of National Board of Examinations in Internal Medicine from New Delhi, and the Government of Medical College and Hospital in Nagpur. His MD Homeopathic Medical College was with Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar Marathwada University. And he completed numerous residency programs, including the PG Institute and Super Specialty Hospital in Nagpur. That was in 1999 through 2003. He has been conducting many workshops since 1999 and speaks extensively to professionals and to lay people and is involved in many community activities. He is also an accomplished author of books and numerous journal articles. I'm sure he's going to let us know about his new website that he's just recently opened as well. Session together on air, reducing salt is important. Even though I often am reading the controversy that says salt is good for you, eating more could even lower the chances of heart disease was a recent article that I read, that there are controversial findings that question the authorities to get people to cut the consumption of salt. And we also know that there is a homeopathic remedy called Natrum Muriaticum, which is NaCl, which is common table salt, that is used specifically for hypertension. It is just one of the many, many remedies that can be used. A study claims that cutting down on salt can actually increase the risk of dying from heart attack or of a stroke. And the research has left nutritionists scratching their heads. Its findings indicate that those who eat the least sodium, that's about one teaspoonful a day. So I challenge people to see and count how much sodium is in the food that they eat, how much it adds up to, and what about putting that salt onto their food when they have salt on the table and sprinkle it on. I know that some people will talk about whether it is common table salt that is processed and has all different kinds of minerals put into it, or whether it is a natural salt that comes from like Celtic sea salt from the sea or from certain areas in different countries around the world. I believe that Dr. Adel, and he can confirm this with me when he gets on the line, has mentioned that you want to be eating the natural salt from the area in which you live. And so basically, I kind of gave an introduction about your background and about, I was just talking a little bit about salt and hypertension.
I was hearing that.
We want to know like a definition of hypertension to get us started.
Well, hypertension basically is defined as a state. It's not a disease, but it's a state in which the blood pressure, that is the pressure that is above the normal limits. Now, those normal limits are defined by the American Cardiac Society. For example, the diastolic BP greater than 85 to 89 is high normal blood pressure. Between 90 to 104 is mild hypertension. between 105 to 114, it's moderate hypertension, and greater than 115 diastolic is severe hypertension. Likewise, for systolic BP, if it's less than 140, it's normal, but greater than 140 to 159, it's borderline hypertension, and greater than 160 is definitely hypertension state.
Okay. So now we want to learn, those are clinical bits of information when you go to your physician, and or even if you take your blood pressure daily at home to see whether you're in range. So the question is, how does this originate? How does this disease evolve? Because you mentioned in the last show that even young children today have this, we're not supposed to call it a disease now. We're supposed to call it a state of being, I guess.
Exactly. See, hypertension or hypertensive state gives you a long, long, long time before it actually is set in completely. Now, it starts from, you inherit the state. So if my parents have got hypertension, then I have got 45 to 50% chance of inheriting it directly. Now, at which age I would express is totally up to my circumstances, my mental state, some environmental influences like failures or lack of capability of coping of the failures. So the state would come to me, or for that matter, certain drugs or diseases, other comorbid diseases. From very early in life, whenever the hypertension or hypertensive state sets in, it is called prehypertension, hypertension proper, and hypertension complications. So the prehypertensive state is a state of disposition where the person becomes hypersensitive. That is one of the first features that one can easily identify in a tensive state: hypersensitivity, irritability, mood swings, lethargy, fatigue, weight gain more because of water retention, disturbances in sleep, recurrent headache, rather not headache but heaviness of head, increased urinary frequency, and more particularly nocturia. Now this happens more even with diabetes, but also with hypertension. So these are the few features where you get in pre-tensive state. Now, many times we neglect such features and keep on continuing with either local medications or not taking medications at all. And this will continue for even for years together. And finally, there comes a time when once we go to the doctor and he says, yeah, you have a hypertension state. Your BP is actually raised. So then sets in the hypertension disease proper. Now, some of us may choose to modify our lifestyle, take drugs. If not, then again this disease continues. Sometimes the BP is raised, sometimes it is not, and we may continue. Then over a period of time, then we get diseases, complications of hypertension, either in the eye or the heart or the kidney, likewise known as retinopathy or nephropathy or cardiopathy, etc. So this is the evolution of hypertension per se.
Okay. So it's all very interesting. When you say that you see the complications in the eye, heart, and kidney, it just reminds me of Chinese medicine, that there are certain organs that are connected together through the meridians and things. I don't know whether this is something that homeopathy also recognizes, the connection between the expression of disease in certain organs of the body.
See, it's not homeopathy, it's medicine as a whole. The body is a universal whole, and hypertension-like disorders are metabolic disorders or constitutional disorders. They are not organ disorders. For example, hepatitis, it's an organ disorder. But hypertension is a blood disorder, rather it's a multisystemic disorder. So it has to manifest in practically all arenas. And then ultimately, in complications, it chooses one particular organ, for example, kidney or eye or heart or even brain. So it's very difficult to distinguish particularly one organ for such metabolic states like hypertension or diabetes or, for that matter, ischemic heart disease as well. They're all general disorders focusing ultimately, finally, in complication stage to one particular organ.
And it depends on the individual. I know that, let's say, when you go for your ophthalmologist and you go for a checkup, they will either take a picture of the retina of the eye or look in and see, and they can determine a lot about a person's health just by looking at the veins and arteries, the very fine, yes.
Exactly. Retina is a very beautiful picture. It gives a complete input to your hypertensive or a hyperglycemic state. I mean, if hypertension or hyperglycemia has started affecting the organ per se, likewise in the kidney or even the heart, it will first show on the retina. There are four grades of hypertensive retinopathy we call, something called as Keith-Wagner classification. Dr. Keith and Dr. Wagner have classified hypertensive retinopathy in four stages. If it's in stage one, that means this hypertension now has started affecting your organs particularly. So it has to be controlled anyhow. If it is in stage two, by different anatomy of the arteries, the changes in the arteries that occur, we can come to know that this gentleman has, or the lady has gone into stage two. Then stage three will show bleeding, and stage four will show malignant hypertension or the entire fundus. There's a cupping of the blind spot. So it's very interesting. And unfortunately, as far as modern medicine goes, once these stages come, stage 1, 2, 3, 4 come, they're irreversible. But in homeopathy, we have got quite good many medications wherein we have proved, I mean, evidence-based homeopathy is proved that we can regress from stage 2 to at least 1, but not from stage 4 to stage 3.
Okay, let's just review that again. So that in homeopathic medicine, we can address these changes in the states of the body we can address it when it is either in stage one, when it's affecting the organs, or stage two, when we're beginning to show some changes in the arteries and the veins. But when it gets to stage three, when we're seeing bleeding, or stage four, when we're seeing some malignancy or the fundus, the cupping in the fundus, that when you take an examination, at those stages, we do not have as much success. Is that correct?
Because stage four hypertension, it is not malignancy, it is malignant hypertension. That means the hypertension is so accelerated, it's so uncontrolled, that more than one organ systems have been affected, and it is actually, if it continues, it prolongs, it may be fatal to the patient. So it's quite difficult from that stage to bring the patient back with homeopathic medicines alone. But yes, still stage 3 and stage 2, I mean, the bleeding is taking place, or before that, we have a fair idea that the pathology is advancing. It is advancing to particular organ systems. Apart from taking cognizance of the blood pressure itself, we also have to investigate the entire patient in the terms of his heartbeats and the arrhythmias or failure of work efficiency of the heart or kidney, the renal efficiency, and we have to see to it that we can reverse it. So fundoscopy, in fact, is rather mandatory an investigation for all persons of hypertension to be done. We recommend it every year. And if the certain changes have set in, if it's stage one, then we recommend every 6 months, because they give fair idea of how the hypertension is behaving inside your constitution.
Okay. You also mentioned that with homeopathy alone, which kind of indicated that if you do other things like lifestyle changes or perhaps other kinds of alternative techniques, that you're going to get a better result.
Yeah. In fact, no system of medicine is complete, that we have to accept. So as pathology progresses, then it cannot be an only homeopathy. It has to be homeopathy plus. Homeopathy plus major lifestyle changes, changes in the diet. Homeopathy plus some other methods of healing, for example, Reiki. And homeopathy plus biochemic system of medicine, say salts. I mean, it's not alone homeopathy would not be able to tackle because of that accelerated state, pathology being advanced.
Okay, and in actuality, whenever I consider homeopathy as a form of medicine, I don't really think of it as simply a remedy per se, but I do think of it in totality as a total lifestyle plus whatever else you can do to improve the individual's state of being and their vital force. So all of those things. I was also very surprised to hear in the last show on Thursday with Dr. Christina Chambreau speak about the use of Reiki for healing pets. Somehow we've got a lot of static on the line suddenly. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm very much with you. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, the static just went off. Okay, yeah, she really mentioned the use of Reiki as very powerful healing system, and I was kind of surprised. It's not something that I typically will use. And also a lot of people are not using the cell salts, but it should be part of our toolbox, as you say.
Actually, see, holistic healers, which includes homeopaths as well, they should take advantages of such therapies like Reiki. I mean, in our OPD levels also, some people are so stressed. If you give them 1 hour of Reiki, it calms them down, brings down the tensive state. So it's so much better to give Reiki rather than give them medications. And then teach the patients, because it's such a beautiful science and such a beautiful technique of calming ones down. There are different ways of meditations, and Reiki being one of the energy systems, it really, really helps. At least in our practice here in India, it really helps. Yoga, Reiki, then pranic healing. There's another technique called pranic healing. It's an ancient Indian custom of relaxing your soul, spirit, and body one at the same time. I mean, it really, really works.
I'm fascinated. We're going to have to learn. Oh, I think we have some back echoing. Okay, we're really going to have to learn more about how you utilize those. But can you tell us more about that hypertensive nephropathy and...
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, see, as the pathology progresses in hypertension, so not only the BP is elevated, blood pressure is elevated at all times, but because of that, the kidneys keep on shrinking in size. The renal tubules keep on shrinking in size. There is more albumin in the urine. Moment the urine starts throwing albumin, you have got hypertensive nephropathy, what we called. And once that starts, it's a cascading event. Hypertensive nephropathy, hypertension leading to hypertensive nephropathy, and vice versa, the kidneys shrinking in size lead to greater increase in BP. So it's a vicious cycle. I mean, and it's not for, I mean, can't stop it so easily. Luckily, unfortunately, many patients have to put on dialysis or have to be ordered for renal transplant, which even in countries like India is not so easily done. But in homeopathy, we have got drugs like Apis, Apocynum, Acetic Acid, Veratrumvirid, Gelsemium, Glonine, Baryatum Ureticum, Cadmium Sulf, Viscum Alb. All these drugs tremendously decrease the albuminuria, or the throwing of your albumin in the urine, and bring back the patient or bring back the kidneys to somewhat normal levels. And maybe many patients can be off dialysis. I mean, the dialysis can be stopped in between, and they may not need to go in for renal transplant. Homeopathy here is really a blessing.
It sounds incredible. Obviously, I would imagine that these people would need to have a strict diet of some sort, some kind of nutritional plan.
Yeah, I mean, when we are talking about kidneys, one should remember potassium. Potassium, I mean, hyperkalemia should be strictly avoided when we're talking about renal disorders. Maximum chronic renal failure, which goes with hypertensive nephropathy, and ultimately leads to chronic renal failure. So potassium sparing diet or potassium deficient diet, rather fruit deficiency diet, because all fruits and fruit juices contain potassium. So potassium have to be strictly stopped, and you'll see that creatine is a measure of kidney failure. The normal value of creatinine is 1.5 milligram per deciliter. But if it increases more than 2 to 2.8, then it starts the cascade of chronic renal failure. So if you restrict potassium in much greater way, we are saving the patient. We have to decrease potassium, we have to decrease magnesium, and increase calcium in the diet.
increased calcium?
Yeah, increased calcium, because calcium is also thrown away to a great extent and calcium is not reabsorbed. Vitamin D, which controls calcium absorption, is manufactured from kidney. Vitamin D3, the activated form of vitamin D, is from the kidney. So if the kidney is failing, vitamin D3 goes down, and so the utility of calcium also goes down. And that is why calcium-rich diets need to be taken. Excepting fruits. So we bar fruits, we also bar high-grade proteins. For example, cereals. Because 70% of Indians are vegetarians, so cereals consume a high-protein diet. And those consuming non-vegetarian meals, they already have got great amount of protein, so they are restricted. Proteins, excess proteins are restricted and potassium is restricted. And then we can definitely manage renal failure patients to a great extent.
Okay, I want to be clear on understanding. So that you're reducing for the person their diet of fruits or that have high potassium or magnesium, but you want to increase the calcium and the vitamin D3. And the vitamin D3 we know comes through going out into the sunlight and the skin manufacturing, and you were saying it comes from the kidney. So they need the sunlight and the fresh air, but what would there be supplements that would be given of calcium and vitamin D3 or specific foods? And then again, you want to have less protein in these patients?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, you are talking about vitamin D3 from skin. Yeah, it comes from the skin. Vitamin D3 undergoes three types of stages. I mean, the raw form of vitamin D, it's not used. Once it's exposed from the skin to the sun rays, it changes itself and chemical structures change, then it goes to the kidney, and from the kidney, it is activated form of vitamin D3. So that's why kidney is very, very important. A functioning kidney is important for vitamin D3 to be activated. Otherwise, it will not be activated. Secondly, here we do need to give excess calcium supplements. But as far as food is concerned, the bananas cannot be given because they are high source of calcium. Milk also can be given. Milk can be given. Some people agree. Some people disagree, but depending upon the calcium state, we introduce milk in the diet or delete milk in the diet, because milk is again a protein source. So you have to balance between calcium, protein, potassium, and of course, glucose can be freely given if diabetes is not there.
Okay. It can get a little bit complicated when a particular food source has both aspects, and to determine what is acceptable for a particular individual. And it sounds like because the uremia and the kidneys, that we're going to see a lot of symptoms in the urine function to indicate where they are in their stage of hypertension. So, and you're saying that when the person urinates, they're losing many of the valuable minerals that are required?
Yeah. I mean, kidney is supposed to retain all sorts of proteins. So there has to be no albumin in the urine. It retains glucose, so there has to be no glucose in the urine. So it only throws away waste products in the form of nitrogen and urea. So if albumin goes out, glucose is going out along with it. An albumin molecule is a good big molecule. So if it goes out with the urine, then also with it are smaller molecules of all vitamins like cobalt and zinc, and that is why you keep on having chromium, all that is selenium. So all these micro vitamins as well as macro vitamins, they keep on going along with albumin, and unfortunately we end up in a cascading cycle of nephropathy, peripheral neuropathy, and then all those pathies, I mean each organ affecting because of lack of macro and micronutrients.
Okay. This is really a good education about the function of the body and human anatomy and physiology. I think it's really helpful for people to really understand how their body works, to maybe take some positive, proactive steps in caring for themselves, because it is very difficult for people to actually change their habits that they've been having. You also mentioned something to me about the management of the heart, and that there is a heart enlargement that can possibly occur due to the hypertensive state.
Exactly, exactly. Hypertension. Hypertension itself is a self-explanatory term. See, whenever the pressure increases, the heart is a pump. It's a simple pump. It tries to cope up. A muscular pump trying to cope up. What can it do? Heart is the only organ in the entire body which cannot multiply. I mean, once the cells have been there, they are there. They cannot multiply, but they can stretch. Like a rubber band, they can stretch. And they would stretch to a limit. Once the stretch, that stretching is called hypertrophy. So for quite some time, the body tries to maintain the blood pressure by stretching. But when overstretching takes place, from hypertrophy, it goes to dilatation. That dilatation is irreversible. Now, once the heart is dilated, it is called as congestive cardiac failure, or left ventricular failure, or right ventricular failure. Now, once that happens, then there is no return. The work efficiency of the heart, which is more than 80%, drops down to 50%, 40, 30, and the moment it goes below 30, then we term it as failure. And in modern medicine, at least, it's irreversible. I mean, you can't reverse that thing. Luckily, in homeopathy, we have got certain drugs, like Convallaria Mijalis, which increases work efficiency of the heart. And we have proved cases where we can have shifted the work efficiency of the heart from, say, 10%, 12% to 32%, 40%. So, I mean, we have got, even in this stage, we have got drugs which can help the patient and make their lifestyle easier. So, there are two types, hypertrophy and dilatation.
Okay, hypertrophy and dilatation. So, let's review again that the hypertrophy is where the heart stretches to try to maintain the blood pressure.
Yeah, and it can come back to normal as well.
Okay, so that's a positive note. And then the dilatation is, explain that one more time.
Dilatation is permanent. I mean, the stretching is, one example like a rubber band. If you overstretch it, then it's unable to come back to its original position.
Right.
So dilatation means overstretched heart, it's a strained heart, and you're going to get reduced work efficiency from the dilated heart, but increased work efficiency from a hypertrophied heart. But then hypertrophy is again not normal. It's just nature's mechanism or the body's mechanism to cope up. Till that time, you have to decrease your pressure, and with homeopathy, we can decrease the blood pressure as well as the hypertrophied heart. Now, drugs like bromelain, excellent work in hypertrophied heart. So, okay. We have got drugs for that.
Okay, and so I would imagine that if somebody was struggling with this type of a change in their heart, in the physiology of their heart, that they would have trouble like walking up and down stairs, that it would be affecting their lungs as well.
Yeah, the first symptom you get is breathlessness, and breathlessness is a graded breathlessness. Grade 1, for example, you could do your normal work. Grade 2, it increases. Grade 3, the breathlessness further increases. And by grade 4, you can't even do your normal work. Even at rest, you're getting breathless. By sleeping, you're getting breathless. Orthopnea. There's something called as paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea. Paroxysmal means sudden onset. Nocturnal means by lying down at night or even at daytime, and dyspnea means breathlessness. Now, when this happens, it's a sure sign that your heart has failed or heart has completely dilated.
Okay, so we have a couple of minutes left to the show, and it seems like really what we want to do by having these talks together is help people to understand, to get in touch with themselves, what's happening with their body, the symptoms that they're noticing, and how we help them to want to make changes and enable them to make lifestyle changes, to check up with their physician, and learn about homeopathics so that they find somebody who can help them in all of these ways, and feeling positive and hopeful that there are things that can bring them back to a state of normalcy. Do you want to tell us about your new website?
Yeah, thank you so much. Recently, we have launched our website called Homeoacad, H-O-M-E-O, it's not H-O-M-O-E-O, H-O-M-E-O-A-C-A-D.org. Well, recently we launched it, and because we are primarily working in the field of cardiology, I've posted many blogs therein. I mean, people who can go there, we read, and to sum up the entire show about hypertension, because next time probably we'll be taking about heart failures. So to sum up the show, A, if I have got a family history of hypertension, I am most likely to get hypertension myself. B, how do I know that I am hypertensive or not, or I am entering the arena of hypertension or not, I am in a hypertensive state or not? I will first start with mood changes or mental changes, mood swings, irritability, lethargy, and all those symptoms. If they are persistent and bear no explanations, then probably I may be having some such of metabolic disorders like hypertension. Over a period of time, if I get hypertension, then I have to take two or three things into cognizance. Number one, swelling. No point of time should I get swelling or bagginess under my lids or over my lids or over my feet. If I see them repeatedly after long stretching hours, for example, in the evenings, then yes, I may have entered not only hypertension, but now hypertensive cardiopathy or a hypertensive nephropathy. For me, then it's important to go to a physician and check not only my BP, but my parameters of my kidney, parameters of my heart. Even if that's there, many people may advise me to increase my doses of the drug which I am taking. I can go to a homeopath and ask for help, because there are excellent homeopathic remedies which can let my original drug remain at that milligrams as well as decrease my BP. If I have been declared to have a complication, say example retinopathy, I need not get disheartened. Yet go to a homeopath and take drugs which can improve my vision. If I have been detected to have chronic renal failure, my kidneys are shrunk, I need not always go in for dialysis or kidney transplant. I may go to a homeopath and get certain drugs, continue for a particular time, and then see the effects. If I am detected with heart disorders, enlargement of the heart or heart failure, yet there are excellent homeopathic drugs which can maintain my status and decrease my symptoms like dyspnea or breathlessness, swelling, urine frequency, stools, constipation, etc., and sleep. So homeopathy in all has a great role to play right from a pre-hypertensive state to its complications. And one more thing. If I am yet not got hypertension disease, I can take my constitutional remedy that acts as a preventive, acts as a vaccine for me not to develop hypertension in future.
That's wonderful. I'm very interested in all of the different signs and symptoms that you mentioned, the dyspnea, swelling, constipation, the sleep changes, and possibly even perspiration. Do you have an idea what we're going to talk about next on next week's show?
Yeah, one of the very important, interesting aspects in homeopathic cardiology is failures, heart failures, which I have just mentioned between hypertrophy and dilatation. We'll be talking more in details, because there are lots of heart failure is the end result of practically all cardiac disorders.
Okay.
So I would like to talk about hypertension or heart failures. And also, continuing this hypertension a little bit, we will talk about pulmonary hypertension, which is an area which homeopathy can give some great help to modern medicine as well as patients. Pulmonary hypertension is a separate topic by itself. It is different from systemic hypertension, its behavior and all. But when those people who are having that pulmonary hypertension, they undergo a great ordeal. And my friends, let me tell you, homeopathy is there to help. We have got certain drugs, and we have proved at a center in India that
we can decrease pulmonary hypertension. So we would like to talk about pulmonary hypertension as well in the next show.
That's wonderful. This has been really, truly enlightening, and I hope that more people will listen. Don't forget to share this show on Twitter, on Facebook. You can even take the widget and put it onto your own website or blog. And so we're going to say thank you very much. We're going to end the show and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World.